back every day. Yeah.
This is The Takeaway with Tanzina Vega.
Yeah, I'm a victim of recidivism. I only be civilized in the prison system. Yeah, religious stigma keep a sinner's vision. Skin stigma's a bigger division. It can't be minute, it's cemented and demented. My window's tinted and my skin is, which one is it? When you violate my rights and my amendments, same rights was never.
That's Sigs, a song from B.L. Sherelle off the album Asada Troy, which comes out later this week. B.L. is also the deputy director of the record label Die Jim Crow, and that's the first nonprofit record label for formerly and currently incarcerated people. Artists and producers with Die Jim Crow travel to different facilities around the country and record music with people currently behind bars.
And we go in for maybe a week and we just literally record. I mean, people forget where they are. You know, like, we just are in the lab, a bunch of creative musical masters just creating music.
I could barely get fresh, wore that designer rarely, till I did that math, like, hold up, that one I gotta carry.
I sat down with BL to talk about her music, her activism with the label, what this moment in history means to her, and how exactly Die Jim Crow started.
So, interestingly enough, it started from a concept album called Die Jim Crow. My executive director, his name is Fury Young. He wanted to produce a conceptual album about Jim Crow in general, telling the story of mass incarceration to up to date. He was looking for artists to write songs for this album. And I wrote two records for an EP that we did put out. And we had so much material left over from a lot of the prisons that we went to, so many talented, beautiful musicians. But it didn't quite fit the format of the album because the album was conceptual and it was very concise in its direction. So we were just wondering, well, what do we do with this extra material? You know, do we give it to like their families? What do we do? And that's kind of when we became an organization because it was all about an album originally.
So BL, I want to stop you there because I think this is really interesting because you're helping produce music with your own music, with other musicians, with the label, but you're also recording with people who are currently incarcerated, right?
Correct.
How do you do that?
It's very hard. The hardest part is the access, getting access. Interestingly enough, we've had a lot of success getting access down south in states like South Carolina. We worked in Mississippi. We've done work in Ohio. We've also done work in Oklahoma, but they let us come in and we have band directors who we work with very closely. And when we come in, they're already, they've been practicing, they've been writing, they've been doing everything they need to do. But we have very talented musicians, wonderful writers. Our band directors are beautiful people. Some of them, you know, really serious and heinous, you know, situations. But they have grew into beautiful people, beautiful characters. And we go in and we record with them. And then after that, you know, there's a lot of work to be done in post, and we make great, great, great freaking music. I think at the end of the day, that's what we stand on the most, is the quality of our music.
BL, you said that when you go into prisons and record, sometimes people forget where they are for a moment. And I think for people who are incarcerated, that must feel like a relief.
Yeah, well, I had it happen to me. I was working with my artist, B. Alexis. And she's in South Carolina. She's serving a 30-year sentence. She's been incarcerated since she was 17. And she's about 28, 29 now. And when it was time to leave, it just hit me like, wow, she's not coming with us. Like, you know, because we were just so busy just working every day. I mean, you come, we there 7 in the morning. We don't leave till 6 at night. And we do the whole thing all over again, you know? And I feel like I could see it in her too, where she kind of realized, I got to go back to the unit, you know, and go on this merry-go-round, this never-ending wheel. It was really, really incredibly sad, honestly. But when you think about it, it's beautiful in its moment. You know, all walks of life, we have people who have never been in prison sometimes come in and help us out, Grammy Award-winning musicians and things like that. And to even see them at first come in very uptight and kind of scary and, you know, not really loose. And then they kind of, after a few days, they forgetting where they at too. You know, they cussing, they, you know, they getting in their bag, you know. So it's the ultimate equalizer, music is, in my opinion. And that's why we, you know, do what we do.
Well, and it's something, you know, it's a population that I think is often talked about, but not talked to directly. Incarcerated folks, and largely, you know, we're talking about Black and brown and poor people. And you yourself, you spent 10 years behind bars. Tell me a little bit about what your background is, because I know that for a lot of people who end up in the system, there's usually some sort of complicated history there.
Yeah. So my story is really, really very typical to a point. My mother was an addict. By the time I was probably 12 years old, I was ingratiated into the lifestyle of selling drugs. So by the time I was about 17, me and my mother were co-defendants on three separate occasions. This was more like a family business. This is how I was raised. It was very normalized in my household. And I had a very strong grandmother. So it's not like I had no moral compass at all. But I was pretty much groomed in that environment. And, you know, I'm 32, so I've been on some type of supervision or probation or incarcerated since I was 12 years old. This year is the first year in 20 years that I've been completely free.
When you say completely free, so our listeners understand what that means, you're talking about not being on parole or anything, right?
Right. March 27th of this year, I was finally released off of parole, any type of supervision. So this is the first time I've had this experience since I was 12. And basically, I was groomed into, you know, doing these things. I was a very smart kid. You know, the moral compass was different when my mom was under her addiction. And she's clean, by the way. I can never bring that up without always saying she's been clean for about 13, 14 years now. But, you know, by the time I was 13, I was selling crack to my mother. By the time I was 18, I was serving a 12-year sentence for aggravated assault against an undercover police officer who pulled a weapon out on me. And I pulled the weapon back and we exchanged fire. And I was shot multiple times, beaten really bad, but I'm still alive. And that's not, you know, what a lot of people can say for a lot smaller things. So sometimes I struggle with a little survivor's remorse behind that I actually survived something like that. But yeah, that's what happened.
BL, that's a really complicated story. And I think something that I appreciate you sharing that with us. I know a lot of people don't like to talk about the stories that got them into the system. And so I appreciate you sharing that story with us. The album that's going to be released by Die Jim Crow Records is called Asada Troy. It's coming out on June 19th. What's the name of the album mean?
The name of the album just means she who struggles is a warrior. So Asada is she who struggles. And that's what I was going to name my my child who happened to make it all the way here. So this is my new baby. And I was going to name her Asada Troy because I love Asada Shakur, number one. I love what she stands for and I love what the name stood for. And, you know, Troy is an uncle of mine who passed away. So we were going to, that was going to be our daughter's name. But the reason why is because, you know, she who struggles is a warrior. And that's how I feel about my life. I've been through a lot. I fit into so many different, categories as far as, you know, sexual abuse victim, felon, you name it, lesbian, black, I mean, fat. I mean, I could just keep going on and on. And all it has done is, you know, made me very strong, gave me very thick skin. And it has truly, all my life experiences have, I really feel like a warrior. I really feel like, you know, a survivor. I don't always play, I'm not playing victim here because a lot of these things I did on my own, you know, but I wasn't dealt the best hand either. So I'm really proud of how far I came.
A lot of the music in your album is very reflective of these experiences. I'm going to play a clip from the song Cigs. Let's take a listen.
I'm a victim of recidivism. I only be civilized in the prison system. Yeah, religious stigma keep a sinner's vision. Skin stigma's a bigger division. It can't be minted, it's cemented and demented. My window's tinted and my skin is, which one is it? When you violate my rights and my amendments.
There's a line in there, BL, that says, when you violate my rights and my amendments, those same rights were never given to begin with. BL, you mentioned all the things. You said you fit into multiple categories. You're a felon, you're black, you're fat, you're a lesbian. What did that do in terms of how you were treated in the criminal justice system?
That's interesting. That's a good question. I can give you a little example. I went to trial for the shooting with the undercover police officer because I wasn't aware that he was a police officer. And that was my argument. Hey, this guy pulled a gun out on me. I didn't know who he was. I was trying to protect myself. And that's the God honest truth. And of course, you know, when you go to a job interview, right, you're not going to go how you may lounge around in your house or how you may hang around on your block. So I was dressed what I deemed appropriately for court. And the DA, she just kept passing around pictures of what I looked like outside of the courtroom. And I thought that was really interesting. For some reason, she kept trying to bring that as evidence in the trial. And instead of, you know, what they saw in front of them, me put together looking like I'm going to court, she just kept trying to reinforce how I may look when I'm out on the street living my life. And I think that, you know, that was a part of just trying to create that aesthetic of for, yeah, she doesn't look like what we said she did right now, but look at this picture. I bet she looks like what she said, what we're saying she did. Does that make sense?
It does. No, it does. And it often speaks a lot to how people are portrayed. I've done a lot of reporting around images that are used for Black people who have been arrested and mugshots and everything in terms of how that affects the ultimate perception of Black people in the system. So I totally understand. I do want to get to another song of yours called Conspiracy. Let's play a clip from that song.
It's been 15, you've been in 1,000 roommates you live with. A new dude with a box walk in, you realize it's your kid. He don't even remember you, even though you're identical. Guess the cycle continues. Yes, the cycle continues. This is the system. Jail in the prison, realize nobody miss you.
BL, that song talks a lot about incarceration as a generational issue, something that you are intimately familiar with, given the story that you told us about your mother and you. What is it about the system overall that you want people who are listening to this music to understand?
I would want them to understand that women are at the fastest growing rate of being in prison right now. And we face so many different challenges than the men. Deliberate indifference to our health care. I have seen countless women die due to just not being diagnosed, due to screaming that something's wrong with them every single day, no one caring. And we don't have a lot of support. So women are getting locked up for having addictions, getting locked up for being abused, being locked up for all kinds of things that can be out resourced elsewhere to get help for these things. And then we don't have the support inside, nor do we have the same support returning. And unlike men, the women race demographics are different. Like in Pennsylvania, it's a whole lot of white women inside of the penitentiary. I just want people to understand that women are being incarcerated at such a fast, such a high rate, and they're losing their children. And I wish that we could point some of our more of our resources towards the women who are facing this.
You're talking about women, incarcerated women of all races who are behind bars. And we know that this is a real issue from women who don't have sanitary napkins behind bars to women who are forced to give birth in shackles. I mean, the list goes on and on about the sort of treatment that women who are incarcerated face. One of the other places that women, particularly Black women, are ignored often is in when it comes to the fight for social justice in this country. I'm thinking of Breonna Taylor, and I'm thinking of the uprisings that we're seeing across the country. And there's now been a focus on Breonna. But of course, we're also talking about the death of George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, and so many other Black men and women who have been killed at the hands of police officers. What do you feel when you look around and you see Black Lives Matter now taking center stage across the country?
I feel hopeful, but at the same time, I'm not looking for a Black Lives Matter Boulevard. I'm not looking for Black Lives Matter on the street on Washington, D.C. I'm looking for policy change. I'm looking for structural change. I don't care if an officer takes a knee at the protest. Call me, you know, maybe pessimistic or negative or whatever, but I need to see policy changes. I'm not here for all the, you know, symbolism. I would like people, every company that's posting Black Lives Matter, I would like to see your hire record and see how much Black Lives Matter in your company. You know, I'm not here for just everybody just jumping on the trend. I would like to see in 6 months, when no one else is talking about this, what policies we have put in place and what these companies and all these celebrities and everyone else who's jumping on the bandwagon for now, how much they have actually applied Black Lives Mattering.
B.L. Sherrell is an artist and the deputy director of Die Jim Crow, the first nonprofit record label for formerly and currently incarcerated people. Her new album, Asada Troy, will be out on June 19th. B.L., thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. And everybody continue to fight. I appreciate it. I'm proud of everyone. Let's keep applying pressure. Let's keep marching. Let's keep signing these petitions. Let's keep donating to these families. And let's keep fighting, please.
With the gang at the bar, stumble all the way to the car. Slouching back of the leg, eyes seeing stars as they roll back. All of a sudden, hit pat. Skirt soul been a snap. Caddy moving real fast, being on the dash, law on that ass. Bang, God, what is a crash? That's when shit go black. When you come to the law, got your damn arms tied behind your back. You don't even know what happened, but you know you ain't a rat. So they take you to book and bail a few racks, but you ain't got that. Victim getting life flighted, charges murder indictment. OG saying bite it, jailhouse lawyers telling you to fight it. Wifey got you on silent, so do your side shit. Sully said it's election year, I don't know what that mean. It mean if you lose, you get in the electric chair. Bleed off for his hella years, you got a hold in a well of tears. Can't cry, all these males in here, you ain't getting no melanin. Think about telling you hella scared, but if you tell them, park it quick. Get the coffee pick, put an L in there. This is the system, jail on the prison, realize nobody miss you. This is the system, you realize them shorties ain't coming to visit my new. This is the system, and when you come home, your kids won't remember you new. This is the system, practice fitness, religion, get wisdom, bless them.